This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Welcome. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. WBEN Arthur Pressman, traffic attorney. News time is 2:09. Very excited. My new atomic clock came in, and that is the one at which I look to determine exactly when I need to break. Now, if you had told me a couple of weeks ago, hey, Tom, you're going to do a show on tariffs, and it's going to be interesting, I would have said, right. I never would have expected it, but I've been all over the tariff story all weekend long. Those of you who are into crypto know that yesterday was Bloody Sunday with crypto. Oh, Bloody Sunday. And a lot of speculation, of course, about the tariffs, not to mention regulatory uncertainty, blah, blah, blah. And Wall Street started off with a thud today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It has since rebounded markedly. And when it comes to matters of financial import, the people to whom I enjoy listening are the financial guys. And we have one of the financial guys. The others are busy conducting business with us on News Radio 930 WBEN, the Trocar College WBEN Live Line. And I want to say at the beginning of the program that whether you are listening in Canada or the United States, if you have questions about the specifics of trade policy and tariffs and you want a professional's opinion, the phone number to call, and he's going to be with us for as long as we want. So you will determine that. Okay, you have free will and actually determination of what I do. The phone number in the 716 is 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. Those are the phone numbers to call. And joining us now, WBEN Arthur Pressman, traffic attorney. News time is coming up on 212. From the financial guys, you can hear him every Saturday afternoon, we have Glenn Wiggle. Glenn, thanks very much, man. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tom. I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
I am delighted that you are here because, you know, usually you say tariffs to people and their eyes glaze over and you have no idea what, you know, they have no idea about what you're speaking and you also might have your eyes glaze over. So, first of all, just so we're on the same page here, and this is going to be very basic, and then we're going to get into more specifics. What is a tariff, and why is this a big blanking deal?
Well, a tariff is another term for a tax, really. So it's a tax on goods coming into the country, and in some cases, we've had tariffs on certain goods for a long, long time. And in some cases, we have specific tariffs on specific goods for specific reasons, whether it's to protect our, you know, U.S. farmers or manufacturing bases or things like that. So, you know, the negative side of tariffs is that, you know, we're you know, free market, you know, global trade, anti-tariff, low tax kind of folks, and that usually is better for the economy. In this case, you know, the concern, and obviously is causing market uncertainty, is that, you know, the tariffs potentially put a damper on economic trade and economic activity, which lowers economic output, which is usually bad for economic, you know, economies and stock markets. So in this case, though, I think, you know, Trump is using these tariffs a little bit differently than we've used them in the past. And, you know, he's starting off using it as a threat to coerce nations to, you know, help us do things that we want to do. And in this case, it stopped the trafficking of the deadly fentanyl over the border, as well as human trafficking. And already, you know, before 10:30 this morning, the Mexico president was already negotiating with the president. So it's working so far.
So basically, despite the massacre in crypto yesterday, and there was blood running in the streets, make no mistake about it, what has been the stock market's reaction, first of all, when Wall Street opened up at the opening bell, and where do we stand now as far as the Dow Jones Industrial Average as well as NASDAQ?
Yeah, the Dow was down about 600 at the open. It was kind of ugly. The NASDAQ was down 1.5% as well. And, you know, since that point, both indices have pared their losses substantially. Last I checked, the Dow was down about 150 points or so, so down 75% less than it was to start the day. And again, a big part of that is because, you know, Mexico has already come to the table to say that, yes, we will assist, and has committed to sending 10,000 Mexican troops to the border to help stop the flow of the deadly drug. So, you know, it's working again. And I think, you know, Trump starts out with these big threats as a negotiating tactic. I don't think the goal is to have 25% tariffs forever, right? I think we're starting off with that as a negotiating point to get, you know, what he wants, and that is safer and more secure borders.
Well, let's talk about that, because this morning, there I was, innocently minding my own business, and the word came across that the tariffs, which were to have gone into effect tomorrow, have been delayed for 30 days following a conversation between the president of Mexico, Sheinbaum, and the president of the United States, President Trump. And as you had just pointed out, the president of Mexico has agreed to deploy 10,000 Mexican troops to the northern border with the United States. And what are some of the other specifics that need to be worked out to the United States' advantage in further negotiations with Mexico? What do we want? What does the president want?
Well, I think he wants some level of fairness, not only with Mexico, but with Canada and the rest of the world. I mean, you know, the media is approaching this as if we've had no tariffs at all anywhere, as if there's been zero tariffs in both directions. And that's just not the truth. I mean, we have countries that tariff our goods substantially. Let's look at Canada, for example. You know, importation of poultry or milk has, you know, tariffs imposed by Canada that run into the hundreds of percent. So it's not as if we're at a zero free trade right now when the entire world is trading without tariffs. There's a lot of tariffs that are out there on different products. And most of the time, in almost every single case, it's America last. And you see the difference in, you know, what we're charging a country for a certain good versus what they're charging us. It's been very lopsided. And I think, you know, President Trump's policy of America first is also trying to balance some of that trade off, so, or those tariffs off, so it's more fair. I think the goal is to get to zero. I mean, if we can get to a zero tariff on both sides, that would be great. It's probably not realistic, but if we can, you know, use it to eventually lower tariffs, to have more fairness. I mean, it's simply not fair for us to have to, you know, export something and you know, have a tariff at 150% when we're not doing the same back the other way. And when you look at the tariffs that we impose versus the tariffs that other countries impose on our goods, it is definitely not in our favor, for sure.
Glenn Wiggle is with us from the Financial Guys, and WBEN Arthur Pressman, Traffic Attorney News Time, is 217. We're talking about the tariffs and the financial markets, which I can't believe we're doing, but I find this abundantly interesting. And our phone number for your calls in the 716 is 803-0930, *930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. Before we get back into more specifics about tariffs, in the macro view, when we went way back when into the North America Free Trade Agreement, a fellow came along named H. Ross Perot in the 1992 election, and he famously said that the trade deals signed by the United States at the behest of all the free traders, the only result really was the giant sucking sound of American jobs being outsourced to places like Mexico because of cheaper labor costs. Was he right?
He was right, and we saw the impact with our textile industry and automakers as well. It's not just the cost of labor, though. It's also the regulations. And that is something that President Trump was also trying to deal with, is making it easier to build auto plants here, chip plants, things like that. I mean, right now, it takes years of environmental studies and permits. And, you know, I'm not saying they have no permits or no environmental studies, but, you know, it is a lot easier to get a plant opened in China. You can do that in about 6 weeks or 6 months. And here it takes 6 years. And so some of that has to change, too. But yes, Ross Perot was right, because they were unfair. You know, if it was simply free trade, it might have been different. But, you know, again, you know, we ended up lowering our tariffs and importing things for zero, basically a zero tariff. And yet these other countries still maintain tariffs on our goods. And so it's been lopsided. But Ross Perot was right. And we did see that, especially in the late 90s in places like Carolina, that lost, you know, a tremendous amount of their manufacturing base, especially when it came to textiles.
Now, how do you reconcile your conservative politics with the idea that free trade is in everybody's best interest? How do you reconcile the two? Because there are a lot of conservatives who absolutely are opposed to these tariffs. They totally believe in free trade, and I get the sense that you don't.
No, I do believe in free trade. I think it's in our best interest to have zero tariffs if we can get there. But we're not there now. And so the other thing we have to realize is that, you know, these tariffs are again, I don't think his goal is to have 25% tariffs forever. His goal is to make America safer. I mean, let's face it, you know, over the 8 years of Vietnam, we lost 58,000 Americans. Every year, we're losing twice that to fentanyl poisoning of our youth and of American citizens. And that has to stop. You know, President Trump is a, you know, he doesn't like war. He likes saving lives. He doesn't want people dying, right? That's his words. I don't like people dying, right? People are dying. I mean, we're losing 110 to 150,000 Americans per year to fentanyl overdoses. A lot of that is accidental, sadly. You know, these aren't hardcore druggies necessarily that are dying. These are, you know, your daughters, your sons, your brothers, your uncles, your fathers, your paramedics, your business people that are accidentally, you know, taking something that they don't even realize that they're taking. And next thing you know, they're dead. And it's an epidemic that we've never seen in this country, where we're losing literally hundreds of thousands of American citizens. And, you know, I'm a fan of doing whatever it takes to make that stop. And if it's a temporary tariff of 25% for a year to get the countries to come to the table like Mexico and help with our border security, then I think that's the bullet we have to bite. But all things being equal, I would prefer to have zero tariffs if we can get there. And I do think that Trump would also like to have zero tariffs. I think the goal is to use this as a negotiating tool, because we are in a much better position. We import way more than we export. And so from a net standpoint, we are in a much better position to, if we're going to negotiate on any topic, this is it, right? We are the importation country, right? So many goods come in that we're in a much better negotiating position.
Okay, we have so many things that I would like to dive into on News Radio 930 WBEN on the Trocare College WBEN live line, Glenn Wiggle with the financial guys. But if fentanyl is the reason for this negotiating stance, 25% Mexico, 25% Canada, except for energy imports, but 10% China, from where the precursor chemicals for fentanyl originate, why does China get off so easily?
That's a great question, and I was surprised at that as well. I would think it should be 50% on China until they're willing to help. But I think the answer to that is Mexico and Canada are right on our borders here. And most of that fentanyl, although it might be originating in China and being pushed by China, is definitely coming over the Mexican border, right? It's coming over the Canadian border. It's not necessarily coming in through the, you know, LAX, flying in from, you know, Beijing. So I think that's where his thought process is I need these countries right here on our borders. I need to coerce them in whatever ways I can to help us to lock down our border and stop this flow of this poison, really.
But how much of it is the fault of Canada and Mexico and, you know, at the beginning of the pipeline, China, and how much of it is the fault of the lax border policies of the previous administrations?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. I think it's a little bit of everything, right? So I think, you know, he's able to address the previous administration's border policies by, you know, making the executive, you know, changes he's already making, the executive actions he's done with, you know, sending troops to the border and things like that. You know, what he can't do is he can't, you know, change Mexico's turning a blind eye to the criminal cartels that they have without some sort of negotiating tactics or coercion. And he's using the tariff as really one of his best negotiating tools. I mean, he wrote The Art of the Deal 30 years ago now, 35 years ago. And he is great at it. I mean, there's no question about it. He knows how to get the parties to the table. I mean, Mexico could have done this 4 years ago. They could have done it 8 years ago. They could have done it 12 years ago. They haven't, right? Canada, unfortunately, as opposed to coming to the table like Mexico has, you know, Trudeau is chosen to pump his chest and retaliate, which, again, it's going to hurt Canadian citizens a lot more than it's going to hurt American citizens. And, you know, Trump will win that. You know, they're playing chicken right now, and Trump will win that. He knows it because he's in a better position. And so from a standpoint of, you know, if you're going to have leverage over other countries to get what you want, U.S. aid and U.S., you know, being the largest consumption economy in the world are your two best negotiating tools. And he's applying both of them simultaneously right off the bat.
Now, I know that finance is your primary motivator in life and your primary area of specialty, but I'm wondering of what use 10,000 Mexican troops would be at the border if the Mexican government and its military are in cahoots with the cartels, either for reasons of personal safety, reasons of bribery, or both. Can we really trust the Mexican military?
Well, good question. I don't know. That's above my pay grade. But, you know, I think just the threat of potentially having the thought of a more secure border and having those troops there maybe changes things. I think most of that work is going to have to come from our side. But at least getting Mexico to acknowledge the problem and at least address it in some way, shape, or form, I think is at least a step in the right direction.
And for those just joining us, President Trump spoke with the president of Mexico earlier today, and the Mexican tariffs have been delayed for 1 month pending further negotiations with Mexico. And we're talking with Glenn Wiggle from the Financial Guys. I'm sure you've listened to their show on Saturdays here on News Radio 930 WBEN about the tariff situation. And we have so much to get into. It's not funny. Originally, Glenn was going to join us for about 15-20 minutes, and I said, please join us for longer because there's so much about which to speak when it comes to this. And you may be on the United States side of the border. You may be on the Canadian side of the border. I doubt we have many people listening in Mexico, but as long as your English is fluent, you by all means can call. The phone number in the 716 is 803-0930, *930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. It is coming up on 226. That is WBEN Arthur Pressman, traffic attorney, news time.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's. So thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knix, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knix Menswear, your friend in style.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omisid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omisid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Think warm, think palm trees, think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, baby. Yeah, this is the Big Bopper speaking. Oh, you sweet thing. Do I want? Will I want?
That, of course, the Big Bopper Chantilly Lace. Chantilly. And it was this date back in 1959, the day the music died. Plane crash killing the Big Bopper, Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, as well as the young pilot Roger Peterson. 66 years ago today. Do I have my math right? Yeah, 66 years ago today. And the influence of Buddy Holly in particular cannot be overstated in the musical world, whether it's the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, Bob Dylan, who says he saw the Winter Dance Party on tour prior, obviously, to the plane crash. The influence of Buddy Holly on rock and roll, even to this day, 66 years after his death, remains absolutely astonishing. Today, right now, we're talking about the situation with tariffs and President Trump and you. We have so many angles to cover with the tariff situation. Glenn Wiggle is with us from the Financial Guys on the Trocar College WBEN live line. And our phone number in the 716 is 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. You know, I talked about the conservative view on free trade, but I also want to talk about some of the labor unions' views on what has been happening in this country over the course of the past 30 years or so when referencing the outsourcing of American jobs to places like Mexico because of the lower costs, including labor. The labor union people have talked about a race to the bottom, meaning let's do things as cheaply as possible, but ultimately nobody's going to be able to afford what anybody's making because nobody's going to have a decent paying job. So right now, obviously, there's great consternation among many of the labor unions, including the UAW, I believe, about what is happening with these tariffs imposed on Canada and Mexico because of the integration of manufacturing. Your thoughts on this race to the bottom? And it would seem as though if you want American jobs back in the United States, this would be a step in that direction, no?
You're right. It is. And that is one of the stated goals of President Trump is to, as he said, you know, if you don't want tariffs, manufacture the goods here in the States. And so, you know, you can look at tariffs in a vacuum, and all by themselves, tariffs are bad. Right. We know that it's an extra cost, whether we look at it as a tax or excise charge or whatever you want to call it. It's an extra cost to consumers potentially. But we're not in a vacuum. Right. There's a lot of other things going on. And President Trump is talking about, you know, bringing back American manufacturing. He's talking about lowering regulation. He's passed executive orders or signed executive, I should say, not pass them, I guess, but signed executive orders to you know, to say, okay, if you're going to increase every regulation you add, you've got to eliminate, you know, 10 others or whatever it is, right? He's talking about eliminating the income tax. Now, will he get the elimination of the income tax? Probably not. But if he goes at it with a big number at like zero, you know, potentially he gets to something that's in between where we're at today at 35% as the highest bracket and zero. Maybe we come in at 15 or 20. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts going on right now. And I think that when the dust settles, you know, this will be beneficial for America and it'll be beneficial for American workers. You mentioned the auto workers. So as I mentioned before, I'm all for free trade, but it's got to be fair trade, right? To Ross Perot's point, so 30 years ago, you know, you look at the auto industry right now, when we import automobiles from Canada, we're charging anywhere between 0 to 2.5% as a tariff. Canada's charging us 25% on every automobile we import into Canada, right, or export into Canada. So that's not fair. You know, they're charging us 10 times a tariff to what we're charging them. And so that's not fair. That's not level, right? If we were both at 10%, if we were both at 2%, if we were both at 0%, great, right? And that's probably not realistic to both get to a zero or to be even, because they have reasons for protecting some of their industries, like we have reasons for protecting some of our industries. And so, you know, with this whole tariff game, there will definitely be certain sectors that are winners and certain sectors that are losers. Our steel industry, for example, tends to be to benefit from potential tariffs, right? Others may, you know, chip makers and technology probably going to be losers in the whole tariff game. But again, I think this is a negotiating tool. I don't think the goal here is to have tariffs forever. I think it's to get these countries to come to the table to seriously reconsider, you know, their relationship with the United States and whether or not we think it's fair or not. It doesn't matter what they think. It matters what we think. And right now, we're looking at some of these countries saying this isn't fair. And we're right, because it's not. The numbers show that.
Now, if the goal is to negotiate a fair trading situation between the United States, Mexico, Canada, and China, another goal of the Trump administration has been, as you just mentioned, to significantly chip away at or maybe do away with IRS and the income tax. So if the Department of External Revenue does not generate significant income by tariffs, because that's not really the goal, is wanting the Department of External Revenue to make up what we would be paying in income tax realistic?
Probably not, you know, again, but I think he's going at it with, you know, I want to go for the best possible scenario in his mind and probably work backwards from that. I mean, is it possible for us to replace income tax with tariffs? It is possible, and it may be beneficial. I mean, we've been in that scenario, as he pointed out, in the last turn of the century, you know, 100 some years ago, and we were a very profitable country at that point. And so, you know, we can operate in a lot of different ways. We can utilize a consumption tax, we can use a value added tax. We don't necessarily have to have an income tax. But the other side of it, again, talking about not being in a vacuum, is this whole, you know, Department of Government Efficiency and some of the absolute waste that they've uncovered into the hundreds of billions of dollars. If we can right-size government and downsize some of the spending, especially when it comes to foreign aid, we might not need all the revenue that we're bringing into the federal government. That would be a wonderful thing, would be to lower the amount of revenue going into the government while at the same time lowering the amount of expenses that they're spending and shrinking the whole bureaucracy as a whole. That would be so beneficial to our U.S. economy. We could potentially get back to growing at 4, 5, 6% rates again, GDP economic growth rates. That's a very realistic if we change some things. If we stay on the same course, if we stick with this Keynesian big government spending, we're going to end up with the same 2-2.5% best case scenario GDP. And we've seen this with Europe. Europe has barely grown at 1-2% for the last, well, my whole career, my whole 30-year career. They've been in the same, you know, barely growing at 1%. We don't want to be in that scenario. We want to get back to 4, 5, 6% growth rates. That's a real possibility if we reshuffle the way that we're charging our citizens. Trump is right in a lot of ways. I mean, we're taxing our citizens to pay for the world. We should be taxing the world to enrich our citizens. Not in all cases, but definitely a balance would be helpful, I think.
But well, one of the government-funded agencies that has been under scrutiny for years is nothing more than a front for CIA has been the U.S. Agency for International Development, which has been tied quite convincingly to a number of covert actions around the world in the guise of humanitarian aid.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at all the spending, whether it's be, you know, the USAID, the you know, all this stuff is just, again, I've been in business for 30 years now. I've done this for 30 years, managing wealth, you know, financial planning. I don't have really, I can't name one client that made $175,000 a year and ended up worth $200 million, right, without winning the lottery or inheriting a lot of money. I've had clients that have accumulated $10 to $15 million with the salary like that, but it took them 50 years to do it. You know, we're watching Congress people go in like AOC for a term, a two-year term, and come out as a multimillionaire after going in poor. You know, something is wrong with what's going on with when we can't even account for where the money is going. Even Zelensky, he's like, I don't know where $100 billion went. I have no idea. Oh.
Yeah,
you know, Biden probably do. Ask Joe; he probably knows where it went, right?
Oh, we need. There's, like I said, Glenn. There is so much we need to get into today. Glenn Wiggle is with us. He's with the Financial Guys. You can hear them on Saturday afternoons here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Glenn Wiggle is courtesy of the Trocare College WBEN Live Line and his own very precious time. Your calls at 803-0930 on the tariff situation with Mexico, Canada. We haven't even really touched that much on Canada yet, and also China. And 803-0930 is the phone number, *930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. My goal and Glenn's goal is to make a very complex subject as easy to understand as possible. Here is Neil in Forestville on WBEN with Glenn Wiggle. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Glenn. Thanks, Tom, for having him on. I was wondering, is there going to be an influx of Canadians coming to shop at our little border town when prices start to rise out of control?
Well, the Canadian dollar is also taking a pummeling compared to what it was. Glenn, do you want to address that?
Yeah, it'll definitely be more harmful for Canadians to continue to buy goods in their country than it is for them to come over to our country, for sure. As I said before, Neil, it's a great question. We are in a much better negotiating position with everybody in the world when it comes to trade, but especially Canada. The Canadians have seen, you know, their inflation rates and their price of goods on top of their, you know, their ever-increasing taxes. You know, it's tough to be a Canadian and afford anything up there now. So, yeah, and when these tariffs go into effect, if they stay in effect, and that's a big if, the Canadian citizen will be hurt a lot more than the U.S. citizen. And so, yes, it will be in their best interest to come over to our country to shop, for sure.
This, in combination with their eco fees and all the other fees that they have tagged onto their citizens, this is going to, like, how long do you think that they could withhold this? I used to haul freight up there and back, and we always took more there than we ever brought back. And I just really would like to know, you know, how long do you give them? 6 months? 3 months?
Not even. I think the pain that they're going to endure from the tariffs if they stay in place will not last very long at all. I think, and Trudeau's already on his way out, right? So, you know, he's already on the ropes anyways, but I don't think they're going to make it very long. I think you'll see their approval rating plummet. Mexico is much smarter. Literally by 10 o'clock this morning, they were already on the phone with President Trump going, what do you need? What do you want us to do? Right. And President Trump said, great, we want 10,000 troops and we'll suspend the tariffs for 30 days. And that's what he did. So
I appreciate your time. I'll let you get on to other callers. Thanks.
All right, Neil, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. 247 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Glenn Wiggle is with the Financial Guys. Let's go to Roy in Boston with Glenn Wiggle. Roy, go ahead with your question.
Good evening, gentlemen. Trade treaties have commissions to arbitrate disputes when a problem arises. When we agree to their decision, we give up some of our sovereignty, and most of the time we lose, and tariffs are part of the treaties. Your opinion on the matter?
Well, there's definitely going to be some fighting in international courts, for sure. I mean, you see China has already made a complaint with the global trade, the World Trade Organization. So, you know, there's going to be some fighting about it, for sure. But, you know, treaties from time to time are broken and rewritten. And so I think Trump's goal would be to rewrite some of these treaties in more favorable terms. And he's got a track record of doing that. Again, he rewrote the North American Free Trade Agreement with the new USMCA agreement, which is a better deal for us. And so I think you'll see, again, it's a negotiating tool, right? Get these countries to the table to negotiate something that's more fair. And I think you'll see, you know, probably some new treaties that are more beneficial to the United States come out of it.
Roy, thank you very much. And USMCA, for those who don't know, is basically a modernization of NAFTA, which was a dirty word around these parts for many years in a lot of circles, but it was a positive word in other circles. It's in a typical divide. We are joined on News Radio 930 WBEN by Glenn Wiggle of the Financial Guys, talking about the tariff situation with the United States, Mexico, and I don't know why, but just 10% on China. And Glenn, how unusual is it when you look at the course of tariffs in American history to impose an imminent tariff before substantive trade talks with your administration really have a chance to get underway?
Well, it's not common at all. But for Trump, it is, right? So Trump comes out swinging first, typically. That is, again, his negotiating tactic is to go for, you know, the biggest number he can get or the biggest deal, right? So I think from a Trump perspective, this is not at all surprising. You know, this is kind of how he negotiates, is, you know, come from a negative and then back it down from there. But from a history standpoint, you know, usually we don't do it this way. Usually we try to get countries to help us, and we try to negotiate from a different standpoint. Again, in this case, we have some serious things going on. And I mentioned fentanyl earlier. Again, we're losing 100,000 more than that per year in this country. We've seen what this has done to our American cities. We've seen the violent crime that has come from these gangs that have come in. And so, you know, I think President Trump is looking at this a bit as a crisis standpoint. You know, what do I need to do right now to get these countries to the table immediately? I mean, he's only been in office for 2 weeks, and already he's gotten, you know, these countries like Mexico to commit to helping us to, you know, get that border sealed, you know, and stop the flow of illegal aliens and illegal drugs. And so, you know, from his perspective, I don't think it's that uncommon. I think you'll see more of these kind of tactics from the president, because this is how he rolls. And I think he'll continue. I don't think he changed the man after, what is he, 78 years old now? He's been doing this his whole life. And I think it works for him. And he's had a you know, proven track record of making it work for him. So, you know, this is again, I think, par for the course for President Trump.
Well, again, things are already postponed with Mexico because of the conversation earlier this morning between President Trump and the president of Mexico, Sheinbaum. And are you hearing anything substantive from the first conversation of the day? There should be another in a few minutes between President Trump and Justin Trudeau in Canada.
I haven't heard anything else. I've had some meetings throughout the day, so I've been off the grid, so to speak, or on the phone since about 11 o'clock. I kind of keeping one eye on the markets. I did notice the Dow went positive briefly there, which was nice. But I'm sure he will be having, you know, conversations with the Prime Minister of Canada. I'm sure he'll be having more talks with Mexico. And these will be ongoing negotiations. I wouldn't even be surprised if we end up with a new NAFTA, to your point, you know, after we're done with this. And so, you know, we'll see where it goes. But I'm sure there's going to be a lot of talks about what is in America's best interest. That doesn't necessarily hurt other countries, but, you know, what can they do to help us with our agenda and what we want to accomplish? I mean, we have been the doormat for the world, it seems, for the last 30 years or at least 25 years. Well, not only are we funding the world, but it seems like every deal we enter into is bad for us and great for other countries. And I think President Trump recognizes that and wants to, you know, again, to his point, he's not necessarily a conservative. He didn't run on I'm a conservative. He ran on make America great again and America first. And I think, you know, he's following through with that agenda.
Your business is helping people maintain and grow wealth. When we have a situation like this, introducing uncertainty into the markets. I mentioned what is being called Bloody Sunday yesterday in crypto, and the adverse beginning to the Wall Street situation. Can you address the uncertainty and what people should do? Because my tactic is always, when things are uncertain, you buy when there's blood in the streets, because in particular with the stock market, it always comes back.
Yeah, you buy when people are fearful and you sell when people are greedy. And that has been a 100-year-old principle that has worked for a long, long time for many, many investors. And, you know, if it were a long-term structural issue, you know, we might take some, evasive maneuvers, let's say, and make a few adjustments. But for the most part, you know, we view these just like you as a buying opportunity. You know, uncertainty in the marketplace that we view as temporary, especially, like this case or like COVID, you know, gives us an opportunity to rebalance portfolios or put money to work that maybe has been sitting on the sidelines. And so, you know, we'll take this opportunity to put more money in or buy down or rebalance if we think it's appropriate. And so, you know, we like the uncertainty. Investors don't always like the uncertainty. It's, you know, nobody likes to see their 401k go down. Nobody likes to go online and look at their statement, you know, on the daily and see that it's just pulled back in a day. But, you know, as we always say, and I know it's like beating a dead horse, but it is true, you know, take a long-term approach. You know, think about where the stock market's going to be in, you know, 2 to 5 years from now, not 2 to 3 weeks or 2 to 3 months from now. You know, where are you in your financial life? You know, how close to retirement? Are you drawing an income from your portfolio or are you adding to your portfolio? All of these things play a role in how you should adjust, you know, your financial plan to the markets. If you're still accumulating, you're still working, putting money into a 401k, absolutely these down markets are times when you should try to increase those contributions and put more money in to take advantage of the volatility. If, on the other hand, you're 75 years old and you're already retired and you're relying on this for income, you know, hopefully you've already set your portfolio up to, you know, have some income-producing securities so that you're not forced to liquidate to meet your distributions. If you're in a scenario where you're liquidating stocks or mutual funds or your investments to meet your income needs, that's a little bit more dangerous of a scenario because you run the risk of kind of reverse dollar cost averaging. And sure. You know, we talk about the benefits when you're putting money in a 401k, right? You're getting an average lower cost by putting in the same amount of money every week or every month. Same is true on the reverse. As you're taking money out, you can get an average lower sell price, which is not ideal when you're liquidating anything. So there are ways to structure your portfolio to not have to worry so much about it.
All right, we're going to continue talking about this in the next hour. And, of course, the most important question Glenn is going to ask anybody coming in is, what is your risk tolerance? And consider your age and where you are in your working life in order to structure something that makes sense for you. Somebody in their 30s can afford to take more risks than somebody in their late 60s or 70s. 257 at News Radio 930 WBEN. We are delighted to have Glenn Wiggle from the Financial Guys. You hear him every Saturday afternoon with us on the Trocare College WBEN Live Line on News Radio 930 WBEN, talking about the tariffs. All right, welcome. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN, and I never thought I'd be doing this show, but I'm doing this show on tariffs because tomorrow a 25% tariff was supposed to have been levied against Mexico. That is going to be delayed 30 days pending negotiations. And as we speak right now, President Trump is on the telephone with Premier Trudeau of Canada, and we don't know if there's going to be a similar announcement of a postponement following that phone call. Waiting for word on that. Canada also would face a 25% tariff, except for energy, which would be tariffed at 10%. Meanwhile, China only gets hit with 10%. Which I find interesting and, frankly, a little bit puzzling. Joining us from the Financial Guys, and you may listen to the Financial Guys radio show on Saturdays, we have the inimitable Glenn Wiggle. And a couple of times, Glenn, you have mentioned that let's not, you know, we hear about the potential suffering of people in the United States because of the tariffs, in particular the auto sector, which if these tariffs held, they say might have to shut down in 10 days in the United States because of the integration of the automotive industry with the United States, Mexico, and Canada, which together comprise North America. But in Canada, our neighbor, Ontario, the leader of Ontario is going to rip up a contract with Elon Musk's company Starlink, which would have benefited Canadians in rural areas of Northern Ontario in particular, cabin country. How does depriving your own citizens of fast internet access in Northern Ontario, because there's a vast area between Toronto and the Northern Circle, the Arctic Circle, how does that benefit Canadians?
Well, as the saying goes, I mean, liberals love to cut off their own nose to spite their face, right? So, you know, it just seems like the natural reaction to punish your own people oftentimes when something goes awry or the way that you don't want it to go. We did the same thing with North Carolina. I mean, Elon Musk was delivering a bunch of Starlinks to the area that was hit heavily by the hurricane, and they were turned back. And so it does, it defies logic. It just makes no sense whatsoever. You know, it doesn't make sense either that we spent how many billions of dollars, you know, to enable Wi-Fi in rural communities. And I think they hooked up like seven, you know, for the same amount of money, they could have easily bought Starlinks for every single one of those folks in the rural communities. And so, you know, government has never operated in a logical or common sense kind of way, but liberal government especially seems to just want to do more damage than good when it comes to the reaction to some of these things.
Now, if these tariffs are not resolved during this second phone call of the day between Trump and Trudeau, who suffers in Canada and how do they suffer?
Well, I think the citizens suffer the most because they're the ones that are going to be paying, you know, higher costs for the goods. If Canada turns around and puts a 25% tariff on our goods, again, they're already suffering, as like one of your previous callers accurately pointed out. I mean, they've gotten tax upon tax upon tax. And so the Canadian consumer is way worse off than the American consumer. And so, you know, the political pressure from the citizens in Canada will be enough to change their course. Right now, you've got a lame duck prime minister, so to speak. He's on his way out. He knows it. The new leadership that comes in will likely be much more conservative and will probably be able to negotiate much better deals with Trump. I do think that Trudeau will collapse. I mean, he will fold and probably do exactly what President Trump wants. Every country will. I mean, look at what Colombia just did, right? They turned back the plane that we sent down with the illegals that they sent our way. Okay, fine. We're just going to tariff you. And immediately, like the same day after puffing their chest, they're sending their own planes to pick them up, right? Trump knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly the position he's in before he ever engages in any sort of negotiation. He knows exactly the cards he's holding. He knows exactly where the buttons to push, and he knows exactly what he wants to get out of these negotiations, and he will get exactly what he wants out of these negotiations because he's the best at it. I mean, he's run private businesses and negotiated deals his entire career. People like the Prime Minister of Canada, Trudeau, he's kissed butt his whole career. He hasn't negotiated anything, right? And so when it comes to, you know, getting to the table, again, you've got President Trump, who is like a grandmaster chess player, whereas, you know, a Trudeau barely knows how to play checkers. It's not even close. So he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly what he wants to get out of it. And the 99% probability is he will get exactly what he wants out of it, and it will be a benefit to America.
Now, I don't want to go too far into the weeds here, but looking at the value of the Canadian dollar compared to the American dollar, at one point it was briefly down to 60 cents on the U.S. dollar. It's back up to 69 cents on the U.S. dollar. What are the factors that influence that? Because I have to believe that that is of relevance on the Niagara frontier because of all the Canadians who come over to do their shopping.
It is. I mean, you know, it's going to fluctuate, you know, day to day, week to week. I mean, it's not that far off where it was. I mean, our economy is stronger and our dollar continues to strengthen. That can be a bad thing when it comes to our economy. And so, again, there's all these different factors at play. You know, nothing is in a vacuum and you've got to look at all these different factors, how they're going to affect things. But, you know, our economy is in a much better position. If we start to drill baby drill, as President Trump intends, that's going to put even more pressure on Canada. You know, at one point in the very short years, 4 years that Trump was president his first term, we went from being very dependent on foreign oil to being energy independent. It can happen quickly. It did before. And I think it will again, is if we can continue down the path and the policies that he's laid forth with, you know, opening up, you know, Alaska and you know, the Gulf and finishing the pipeline, and all these things. You know, that's a huge export from Canada. Is oil and gas. The less we can be dependent on other foreign countries for our energy, the better off we're going to be and the stronger we're going to be as a country. And that, I think, hurts the Canadian economy a bit if we become energy independent. So, you know, we're in, a great position to negotiate. We hold most of the cards. You know, we've been, again, on the short end of the stick with a lot of these deals for many, many years. And so, you know, when you look at our economy and, you know, we are a consumption economy. We're the biggest consumers in the world. You know, every country wants to do business with us more so than we need to do business with them. You know, if we stopped doing business with any one of the European countries, honestly, it would have such a minimal impact to our economy. It'd be almost unnoticeable. However, if one of those countries were unable to import into our country, it would have a massive impact on their economy. So again, we're just in such a better position from a negotiating standpoint to level things off and make things more beneficial to America, which is Trump's agenda, and he knows he's got those cards in his hand, and he's going to play them.
Well, speaking about U.S.-Canadian transborder relationships, I was reading an article over the weekend that many Canadians who have property in Florida find themselves in a sell position because the homeowners insurance rates and the property taxes, yes, property taxes, even in the Sunshine State, are going up, making it untenable for a lot of Canadians to be snowbirds at this point in their unloading property. And also, dealing with Canada, one of the things that we don't talk about a lot here, because we've got our own housing situation, and you know, we have limited inventory right now in Western New York, but that's a different story. But in Canada, there's a real housing crisis, and one of the reasons prices are so high, Glenn, is China is buying up a lot of real property in China or in Canada. What kind of a national security or financial risk does that pose for the United States?
Well, it could be substantial. I mean, China's doing the same thing in this country, right? They're buying a lot of farmland that just so happens to be right next to our military installations. And so, again, it comes back to fairness, right? You know, try buying a property on Crystal Beach, right, in Canada. You can't. It's near impossible, right? And so, you know, it's like we can't own and invest in Canadian companies or Chinese companies. We can't buy land in China, right? But they're buying land here. So it comes back to fairness again, you know, when it comes to, you know, the way we're being dealt with and the way we're dealing with other countries and what we're allowed to do in their countries versus what they're allowed to do in our countries. But, yeah, it is a big security risk for sure, whether they're buying property in Canada or they're buying property, you know, in the United States. You know, China is our biggest adversary. Make no mistake, they want to be the dominant country in the world. They want to be the superpower, but they want to be the superpower with you know, with their communist government, right? So, you know, anything that they do when it comes to buying properties or land, you know, I think it needs to be looked at, you know, and scrutinized very, very closely. But, you know, there's, you know, we've had a huge surge in prices of homes. A lot of that is demand, but a lot of that is inflationary too, right? Again, we shut down our economy for COVID. And, you know, Mike and I were some of the few people, you know, screaming at the top of our lungs to not do that, right? Don't shut down the economy because it will have long-lasting impacts. This whole idea of transitory inflation that they talked about in the first month of COVID was ridiculous. You know, they're making up terms to justify, you know, their foolish government actions. And so, you know, the price of building a home, the price of lumber, the price of materials, the price of labor, all of those prices went up. That put a lot of pressure on home buyers. And then you couple that with higher interest rates due to higher inflation, you know, that made housing very, very difficult. So again, those things will change. You know, hopefully we can get back to a more supply side economic stance where we incentivize the suppliers, not only of manufactured goods, but also raw materials like lumber. We have lumber in this country, plenty of it, and yet we're importing a huge amount from Canada. It's about taking advantage of our own natural resources in some cases. It's also about, you know, getting some fair deals in other cases. So, you know, it's there's a lot of moving parts right now, and I think President Trump is really upheaving a lot of different things. I mean, he can be the master of chaos at times with his master plan of, you know, kind of bringing things back together. And I think we've needed a bit of a shakeup. I mean, the last huge tax bill we had was in 1982, and it was instrumental. You know, Ronald Reagan, you know, passed a transformative tax bill that created 401ks and things like that, and, you know, really streamlined the tax code. You could write off credit card interest back then. And the result of that was the largest economic boom and best stock market average annual performance we had from 82 to 99, that to this day is the best in our entire history. And so I'm hoping that President Trump is thinking the same way. Big transformative ideas like eliminating the income tax, changing the size and scope of government, changing the way we do business, all for the benefit of the American citizen. And I think if he does it right, I think it will be a huge benefit. Now, the danger and the risk is he's doing things with executive action first, like tariffs and things like that. The other side of it, as I mentioned, not being in a vacuum, are the tax cuts. Well, that requires our slugs in Congress, right? These folks are not the best when it comes to following through on policy or their promises. So, you know, being reliant upon Congress to pass tax reform is a gamble that he's taking here with some of these tariffs, because I think he's banking on that being the other side of the coin.
Glenn Wiggle, he is with the Financial Guys, and we're talking about the Trump tariffs and their effect on you, the American worker, the American citizen, and also the effects on the people in Mexico and in Canada, and I think to a lesser extent, because it's only 10%, the Chinese Communist Party and the nation of China. And if you have any questions or comments for Glenn Wiggle, we invite your telephone call, whether you're on this side of the border or the Canadian side, at 803-0930 in the 716, *930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. Glenn, you just mentioned something that I was going to get to, and that is lumber imports from Canada. Why is it that, I mean, you fly over this country and you see, hey, there's a lot of wood down there. Why is it that we are even in a position where we have to import so much lumber from Canada?
We shouldn't be. I mean, it's you know, I guess environmentalism would be my easy answer to that. We shouldn't be. You know, we have the ability to be very self-sufficient when it comes to natural resources and raw materials. We just choose not to be. And, you know, we choose to import a lot of the wood that we use from Canada when we could very simply be harvesting wood in Carolina or in Maine. You know, again, we just simply choose not to. So, you know, a lot of these environmental policies have not necessarily even come from the elected officials, but a lot of them have come from these bureaucracies, which is, again, something that President Trump with his, you know, Department of Efficiency is trying to tackle. You know, these three-letter, you know, unelected bureaucracies like the EPA and, you know, Bureau of Land Management that manage a lot of these resources, manage them in ways that are foolish. I mean, you remember probably the highest profile was the Bundy Ranch out west in the, you know, Vegas area issue, right, where all of a sudden, you know, for decades you could graze your cattle on public land, and suddenly under Obama you couldn't, right? And you got this huge standoff, right, because suddenly it was better to, I guess, build solar panels out there or protect the, you know, the snail darter or the three-toed tortoise. I don't know, but it doesn't seem to. You know, look, I'm all for the environment and I'm all for protecting our forests. I'm a huge outdoorsman, huge hunter. But as President Trump accurately put it, you know, you can't put the smelt above people's homes and their livelihoods and their lives in California when you're diverting water for you know, the fish, right? You got to look at things with a balance and a reasonableness. And I think oftentimes when it comes to liberalism, there's no common sense there whatsoever. It's let's protect the smelt. And if you lose your home, too bad, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what else they would say, but that seems to be the policy that I see in places like California that are run by, you know, leftists like Gavin Newsom.
You know, I want to get back to the idea of the auto industry and this integration of the parts in particular that we have with the American auto economy, with the Mexican auto economy and the Canadian auto economy. How does this make sense? Can you explain that to me? Because I don't quite get it.
Well, I mean, we are a global economy, right? And so, again, I'll go back to COVID as using this as an example. When, you know, we're reliant on one little part, let's say, from China, or one piece from Canada, or Mexico might make the drivetrain or whatever, you know, we're reliant on each other to put these products together in the final version of it. Even a pencil. When you look at a pencil, you know, Milton Friedman did a great example on, you know, 5-minute speech on the pencil. You know, the rubber for the eraser is sourced in South America, and the graphite is sourced somewhere in Africa, and the wood is sourced in Canada, and so on and so forth. It takes a global economy to put that one little pencil together. You know, the 10-cent pencil, you know, the brass that goes around the eraser, that comes from another part of the world, right? And so when you have this integration, when you saw during COVID, is that when you saw these disruptions of these supply chains, or the inability in some cases, whereas, you know, China was still shut down in some cases while we were trying to reopen, and our manufacturing or some of our industries couldn't get up to speed because they couldn't get that one little part that they needed from that one little city in that faraway country. And so it can be damaging. You know, it can slow down production. Either they have to resource that particular piece, they have to manufacture it here, or they have to work it out with the country that or the area that they're trying to source that part from. So, you know, whether it's automotive, whether it's microchips, whether it's a pencil, you know, there's a lot of these products that are really sourced throughout the world and integrated into a final production. And it takes all those different components to make that, even that little simple pencil.
Yeah, and there's also talk to be had about the supply chain and the ease with which it can be disrupted. Somebody a long time ago once told me, the more complex an organism is, the easier it is to do away with or to kill. Glenn Wiggle is with us from the Financial Guys, and going to keep him for a little while, contingent upon your telephone calls, questions, and comments on this whole tariff idea. And the phone number, we'll get calls right after the 3:30 news with Tom Puckett, is in the 716. It's 803-0930, star 930, 1-800-616-WBEN.
Every day, it's a getting closer, going faster than a roller coaster. Love like yours will surely come my way.
Yeah, I don't know what that sound in the background is, but sounds kind of sketchy to me. The great Buddy Holly, 66 years ago, Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, Richie Valens, and pilot Roger Peterson died in that plane crash the day the music died. And that, of course, was Buddy Holly, glasses and all. Talking about the tariffs and President Trump, and the latest development is after a morning phone call with the president of Mexico, both sides have agreed to hold off on tariffs for 30 days pending negotiations, and President Trump was set to have his second call of the day with Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada at the 3 o'clock stroke, and haven't heard anything yet out of that. Your questions and comments about these tariffs, how they're going to affect you, what you're concerned about affecting you, 803-0930, star 930, 1-800-616-WBEN. Our guest is Glenn Wiggle from the Financial Guys. You hear his radio show every Saturday afternoon here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Let's go to Joe in Cheektowaga. Joe, your question or comment for Glenn.
Okay, sure. Thanks, Tom. First of all, I want to say I apologize because I just tuned in a few minutes ago, and I heard someone talking, so I didn't know it was a question. Think this is great because I just have a couple comments. I'll keep them short, and maybe Glenn, who knows more about this, way more about this than me, and I'm sure you do too, can expand on it or point me in the right direction. But first, I want to just focus on Canada because I speak for the country here. You know, we love the Canadian people. It's a good group of people. We get along with Canada and everything else. But, you know, when I listen to Trudeau talk about, oh, we're gonna oppose tariffs as well, it reminded me of, let's say, a case where you've got a parent and a little child, right? And the child misbehaves, and now you discipline it. You have some form of good discipline, but the child throws a tantrum, and you break. As a parent, you're not a strong parent. You give in to that, and the child never learns. As opposed to being firm and making certain that child learns that, hey, you're doing something wrong, and, you know, we're going to discipline you, and that's a good, strong parent. So that child grows up to be better. Everything gets better. It's better for the child, better when he's an adult, better for the parents. So that's how I look at Trump. I mean, he knows. See, the people in this country, just my opinion is this, is that they weren't complaining about when, you know, outwardly like they are now about these tariffs, when Biden, and I'm sure I'm not the first person that said this, when Biden and his administration was causing inflation to go crazy, outrageous spending, you know, the criminals flowing over the border, you know, a lot of people were against it, but it was like a silent majority, you know, that type of thing. So all this was going on. Now that everybody sort of, not everybody, but a lot of people are programmed to think, oh, Trump's bad. He's going to do bad things for the country. They painted such a bad picture of him. And I mean by they, the legacy media, the fake news is what Trump refers to him as, is that people have sort of been brainwashed into this thing that, oh, whatever he does, it's got to be bad. But he is that good parent, you know. He's that good parent that has said, listen, Canada, you know, you've not been treating us right. You're letting fentanyl come over. You're letting, you know, you don't have a tight enough border control. We want you to do a few things. And And here's the thing, and then I'll sort of end on this, is that, and then I'll get your feedback, is that the tariffs that people hear, anyone here in this country that's saying, oh, these tariffs are bad, they're going to raise our prices, they're bad for us. Well, in Canada, if Canada's going to come back with tariffs, and they're taxing their people at like 45%, I think, and if Canada mm-hmm. is going to come and say, oh, we're going to tariff you now, that means it's even worse for them. So if tariffs are bad for us, am I right with that, Glenn?
Bingo. You just nailed it, Joe. Absolutely. And I said that earlier. You missed that part. But, yes, we are, again, in a much better position than the Canadian consumer is. They are already on the ropes. And so it will be much more damaging. And Trump knows this, right? Again, from a negotiating standpoint, he's not going into a negotiating not knowing what's in his hand. I mean, he's playing poker. He knows exactly what's in his hand. And he knows exactly what cards to play. And you're right. Trudeau is exactly stomping his feet and having a tantrum and, you know, spouting off at the mouth. And at the end of the day, he's going to kiss the ring. He's already flown down to Mar-a-Lago even before President Trump was inaugurated. And make no mistake, he can bluster all he wants. He can stomp his feet all he wants. He can roll on the floor and have a tantrum. But at the end of the day, you know, he just doesn't have a position to negotiate. I mean, he's holding no cards to negotiate with the United States. And so Trump will win that at the end of the day. It just depends on how long it's going to take and how much pain the Canadians are going to have to go through. You know, from our perspective, for example, we talked about lumber, right? We use a lot of their lumber to build our homes. They said, well, it's going to be a shortage. Right now, the what I read is that it would increase the average cost of a home by about $3,000. Okay. You know, we just doubled the price of home due to inflation. That was fine, right? But now $3,000, that's going to break the bank. Again, the reality of it is I don't think that these tariffs are going to hold. I think it's going to be just like Mexico. We're going to be able to negotiate a better deal. But we've been the doormat, again, for the world. I mean, remember this. In 2006, when Nancy Pelosi actually, I think, took Congress, we were $6 trillion in debt. That was 20 years ago. We're $37 trillion today. That's a $31 trillion increase in just the last 20 years. And as Elon puts it, he's absolutely right. The trajectory that we are on is not sustainable, period. Unless we're going to get our economy growing at 7, 8, 9%, which based on the current regulations and tax code is never going to happen, we're just going to see an ever-increasing debt load that's going to take up more and more of our GDP. And whether it's a business or whether it's your household or whether it's the government, debt crowds out growth. And so more debt that you have, again, whether you're a government or an individual or a business, the more difficult it is for you to grow because you have to allocate some of your resources to manage that debt, right? And so at a government level, it's killing us, right? This $37 trillion is now a huge part of our GDC just for that debt service. We have to shrink the size of government. We have to shrink the expenditures going to foreign countries, and we've got to get back to some semblance of fair trade between us and other nations, including Canada.
Joe, is that all from you?
Yeah. And the thing, too, is that I think we're all I shouldn't speak for everybody, but I'll speak for myself. I think that a lot of people, including myself, have been too used to being ruled by a very stupid Trump's words, I agree with it. A very stupid, not very intelligent, no common sense government. Now that we have somebody who's a good parent, basically, he's not going to put up with tantrums. He's strong. And, you know, another thing about Trump is I feel with my whole heart that he takes a lot of pride in what he's doing and this country. He really loves this country. And people mm-hmm. have to realize that this guy is not going to do something that's going to make himself look bad. I mean, he can make mistakes like any human being, but I think his full intention is he knows what is needed. And Americans have to be thankful now that we've got a president who's that strong parent, who actually knows more than maybe they do, that the people know, that we've got somebody that's intelligent, smart, driven. And did you say, Glenn, did you compare him to a grandmaster chess player?
Yes. Yes. He knows. Yeah. When it comes to negotiating and playing the game, he knows exactly what he's doing. But to your point, Joe, you know, he loves America and he's America first. Joe Biden was the Biden family first. I mean, is there any argument that Joe Biden cared more about the American people than he did his own family? I don't think anybody out there could possibly say that. Right. Barack Obama. Exactly. Did he care about America? Or did he care about his own legacy and his own future? Right. You know, even George Bush, you know, all these politicians, they're politicians first and they're America second. right?
Yeah,
and I think we're tired of it. We, right?
Yeah. I mean, Trump,
all right, Joe, thank you. Joe, thank you very much. Appreciate the telephone call. 803-0930, star 930, 1-800-616-WBEN. Obviously, we don't know right now what is being discussed or what has been discussed in this 3 o'clock telephone call between Prime Minister Trudeau and President Trump. Trudeau has his own, even though he's lame duck, I mean, for that matter, so is Donald Trump, lame duck. The He has a domestic audience to which he must cater. So how does Justin Trudeau save face with his very proud Canadian people while at the same time recognizing the economic realities?
That's a good question. I would love to be a fly on the wall for that phone call. I can only imagine there's a lot of begging, maybe some crying going on by the Premier of Canada. But I don't know. That's a good question. Unfortunately, he came out and made statements about, you know, retaliatory tariffs. Instead of saying, you know what, I understand where President Trump is coming from. I understand his concerns at the border. We're going to talk later today to see if we can avoid these tariffs and negotiate something that helps the American people with what they want. That's all he had to say, as opposed to puffing his chest out and being a typical politician. Now, I think because of the statements he's made, because of the retaliatory comments before making the phone call to Trump, I think he's going to have to walk those comments back, and I think it's going to be more difficult for him to save face versus the president of Mexico, who this morning picked up the phone as opposed to getting in front of a microphone and talking to the press, right? So I think he's put himself in a hole, but I don't know that he knows any better or that he cares, to be honest with you.
Well, he didn't learn anything from his father, Fidel Castro. Sorry, that's a conspiracy theory that's going on. I know Fidel Castro is not really Justin Trudeau's father. I know that. But there's also the goodwill factor, and I'm not talking about Goodwill Industries. I'm talking about the longstanding goodwill between the United States and Canada. Right now, you've got a lot of Canadian citizens who are very upset with the United States, wondering, what did we ever do to the United States? People in Sarnia, where they've got joint U.S. and Canadian flags, are asking that the American flags be taken down. The people in the streets of Canada are very upset by this. What would you say to those people?
I would say be patient, because at the end of the day, if we can get to a better deal for both countries, I think you can create a win-win from the potential of a loss-loss, right? And I think, again, Trump knows that. If we can lower tariffs that Canadian's government is putting on our goods shipping into Canada, that would certainly be a benefit for those Canadian citizens who are right now worried about the increase in price that they may be facing by their own tariffs. And so I think, again, the goal is to get to a more fair deal. The goal is to get to, I hope, lower taxes or tariffs, or maybe no tariffs at some point. But I think it's going to, again, there's going to be some upheaval and some adjustment and some pain to go through as economies adjust. But I don't think it'll take that long. I think Trudeau will likely come back to the negotiating table, and maybe we get a better deal for both sides, and both countries and citizens of both countries win.
Stand by. Glenn Wiggle with the Financial Guys and the Financial Guys radio show is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN at 803-0930, star 930, 1-800-616-WBEN. I don't know about you, but I found this to be incredibly interesting and informative. President Trump talked about some of this at Joint Base Andrews last night, but some of the ways in which Canada has been unfair to the United States. For example, President Trump mentioned American banks in Canada being persona non grata.
Yeah, I mentioned the auto, the automobiles earlier. I mean, the tariffs are 10-1, what they're charging us versus what we're charging them. So banks, financial, I mean, it's interesting. I can do business pretty much, in many parts of the world with citizens in Britain and other places, but not Canadians. Unless you have a U.S. Address, there's a post to a P.O. box doesn't count. You know, in the financial industry, we can't work with Canadian citizens. So, yeah, there's a lot of different things that we're unable to do in Canada. Banking, finance, the tariff, difference in tariffs. There's a lot of unfairness. We're actually even sending them aid, foreign aid. So, I mean, again, we have been the whipping boy of the world for 30 years. And for 30 years, we have gotten the short end of the stick when it comes to a lot of these deals. And I think you're seeing the impacts of that when it comes to our debts and our deficits and our economic growth rate. So we got to get back to some level of fairness and some level of evenness, or we're going to continue down this, you know, just kind of lumbering down the same path of, okay, another $2 trillion in debt, you know, soon we'll be at 40, next we'll be at 50. It's not sustainable at 37, let alone 40 and 50. And so, you know, we need to start doing things now to put ourselves on better footing. And Trump is doing a lot of those things. There are many things that are he's working on, from energy independence to tariffs to better trade deals, to securing the border, to safety, to, you know, overhauling or overhauling the tax code, regulations, efficiencies. I mean, it's a full court press right now, and he's applying pressure in every way he possibly can. To
well, it's weird, you know, to see some signs of life. It's weird to see some signs of life in the White House. I'll say that much. But you alluded to this before, but Ukraine. And even the president of Ukraine basically said over the weekend, yeah, I don't know where the 170 whatever billion dollars went because we didn't get it. What's going on with Ukraine and corruption and the American government? How are we being screwed?
Well, and in more ways than we probably know, Tom, sadly. And, you know, the one of the things that jumped out at me was I was watching a special on how some of these Ukrainian politicians were suddenly buying multi-million dollar mansions. I mean, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to start to connect some of these dots, right? You know, BlackRock will likely get the rebuilding contracts, just like Joe's brother did in Iraq, right? You know, most of these contracts to rebuild Ukraine, or, you know, to sell goods there, most of these contracts or many of these contracts will go to politically connected people, donors, you know, lobbyists, in some cases, family members, in the case of the Biden's family. You know, it's like government sanctioned money laundering. You know, money goes over. We have no idea. It's not even just with the foreign aid in foreign wars. It's our own Pentagon. Our own Pentagon hasn't passed an audit in how many years now? I mean, that's why are we accepting this? I mean, this is the problem with our congressmen that I called slugs earlier. You know, do your jobs. You know, your job is congressional oversight, right? Congress and the House of Representatives have the power of the purse. Our founding fathers and the genius of how they structured our government, we need to be using the way that they structured it, you know, to apply those types of pressures, but we don't. You know, it's like a rubber stamp. It's like, you know, the two folks that were running the developmental agency, you know, everything was approved, everything, right? Congress needs to do their job and start holding some of these, not only the foreign wars, but also our domestic agencies, including the Pentagon, accountable when they lose money. The State Department, under Hillary Clinton, when she was the Department of the head of state, how many were they, $40 billion they lost? They just couldn't find it? We just can't figure out where it went. That has to stop. I mean, this is people go to work. They get up every day, go to work from 8 to 5 and pay a lot of money in taxes. In New York State, the highest earners are paying 45% in taxes, 35% at the federal level and almost 10% at the state level. That is almost half of your paycheck, and that's before you pay your property taxes, your sales taxes, you know, everything else that you have to deal with, right? Registration fees and blah, 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 blah. You know, we have to get this, you know, to a point where we at least know where the money's going and if we want to fund some of these things. But we're literally losing, just misplacing hundreds of billions of dollars of hard-earned money. There's no money tree in the White House garden, right? There's no place that they're just making money outside of the Fed, unfortunately. But that has consequences too, right? We saw that with inflation, right? And as Ronald Reagan put it, you know, we have inflation not because the people are living too well, but because the government is living too well. And we've seen that, you know, witnessed it firsthand in the last, you know, several decades now, and it has to come to an end.
Well, transparency, I just want to keep you for the first few minutes of the 4 o'clock hour, Glenn. I'm not going to keep you the full half hour, but want to talk about transparency in government spending and what Elon Musk has said about that. All right, welcome. It is Bowerly News Radio 930 WBEN on the Trocare College WBEN live line. We've had Glenn Wiggle from the Financial Guys. You can hear Glenn on the radio right here on News Radio 930 WBEN every Saturday afternoon. We've been talking, obviously, about the tariffs, and if you're just joining us, Mexico will not have tariffs slapped on it tomorrow. There's a 30-day postponement in that, and I still haven't heard anything substantive from the 3 o'clock call. They spoke earlier this morning between the leader of Canada for the present, Trudeau, and President Trump. one of the things that has become a new issue is the availability of American banks to the Canadian marketplace. So we shall see what today brings. Glenn, if Canada joins Mexico and these tariffs are postponed, let's say for 30 days pending negotiations, what are the short-term effects that would have on the stock market?
Well, I think it'd be a positive. You already saw that with Mexico, right? The Dow opened the day down 600 points, was able to claw back to a break even just on the news that there was a conversation and the tariffs would be paused. So I think it would be viewed as a positive. I think there's a lot more negotiating that has to happen, and I think there'll be a lot more uncertainty that will come out of this administration, at least in the near term. So I would expect more volatility. Doesn't all mean it's going to be downside volatility, but I think you're going to see some choppy markets over the next couple months as, you know, people kind of settle into a new reality and the policy changes, which I think are long overdue, especially when it comes to our income tax.
Now, you mentioned the name Elon Musk a couple of times, and one of the ideas Elon Musk is striving for in terms of government accountability for the money it takes from us is making everything available on with blockchain technology on a ledger to make it simpler for people to track where the money is going. Have you had a chance to think about the ramifications of that?
It would be bad for politicians, I can tell you that much. I think it would be a huge positive for the American people to see where their actual money is going. You know, we've gotten so big, you know, we're throwing around trillions of dollars like we understand what the meaning of a trillion even is anymore. No. And I think, you know, the more we can push things down to a local level, the more we can make government more localized versus centralized in a faraway, you know, a place, I think more and more people will begin to realize exactly how their money is being wasted in many cases. You know, you look at, we have so many problems in this country, whether it's the drug problem we talked about earlier, homelessness, mental health. I mean, we have so many things we could be funding in this country, and we're throwing around hundreds of billions of dollars around the world. And sadly, most of that doesn't even get to the desired, people it's supposed to go to. So a lot of this aid, you know, including the International Development Agency, you know, I think the statistic that I've seen thrown around is less than 10% of the money that we're sending through the Agency for International Development actually goes into development. Well, where's the other 90% going? I've seen figures as low as zero is actually going to what the intended target is. And so, you know, the sunlight is the best disinfectant. If we can begin to itemize, you know, if you saw somebody's tax bill and say, okay, you paid $10,000 in federal taxes, here's the breakdown of where that money went. I think people would be appalled at where that money is going if they could even account for all of it. And that is the biggest problem, is that we're literally misplacing tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars a year. Yet somehow politicians that seem to go into office for, I don't know, 2 to let's say 10 years come out worth tens of millions of dollars, right? It's not right. Everybody knows what's going on, at least those people that understand economics. It's very difficult to accumulate $50 to $100 million on a $180,000 annual salary when you have other expenses to deal with, right? In fact, if you had no other expenses to deal with and you put that entire amount of your salary away, it would still be difficult to get the Nancy Pelosi wealthy and some of the other politicians wealthy. And I know their husbands and other businesses and careers or wives and things like that in some cases, but not all. You know, you got a guy like, who is it, Paul Ryan, you know, Republican, former Speaker of the House, right? He was poor when he was in the House. And yet when he left the House, suddenly he was worth over $10 million and built a giant 10-foot wall around his new estate, right? How does that happen, right?
How does it happen?
Locally.
How does it happen? Insider information?
That's partly. I mean, we finally passed a bill years ago that barred, I mean, up until the Obama administration, it was perfectly legal for congressmen and women to trade on insider information. Well, it was illegal for you and I. Martha Stewart went to jail for that, right? But they're still doing it, right? They're it's still pretty obvious, right? When somebody has a pretty mediocre, a career when it comes to investing, and suddenly, even locally, you know, their last year in office before they retire, they earn a 238% return on their investments, right? Something funny is going on. But I think, you know, ultimately, if we can start to shine a light on where is every penny going? You know, in our business, you know, we manage over $1 billion in wealth, and we bill those clients every single quarter. And the SEC occasionally comes in and does a routine audit. And one of the very first things they look at is our billing. If our billing is not down to the penny, right, then we're in serious trouble and may have to have an outside audit come in. And if we're wrong, we have to refund the amount of money that we are wrong with. Fortunately, it's never happened. We're down to the penny every quarter. But that is the expectation for private industry. That should be the exact same expectation for government, is I want to see my tax dollars audited right down to the penny. I want to know where every penny is going that is being pulled out of our bank accounts and our paychecks. And every American citizen deserves the same.
And I can't let you go without asking about during the campaign, President Trump campaigned saying we need a Bitcoin reserve. And that seems to have been changing over time to a national crypto reserve. What is the benefit of a crypto reserve?
That is a great question, and I'm still trying to wrap my brains around how the valuation of crypto is even being obtained. And that is the problem with crypto, right? When you look at a company, whether it's NVIDIA or an Apple or a Microsoft, you can look at the balance sheet, you can look at the earnings, you can look at the management, you can look at the statistics of that company and formulate a valuation as to what that company is worth. That's not the case with Bitcoin. Bitcoin just seems to be worth whatever the trading volume is or the supply and demand. So I don't know exactly how that's going to work. I don't know exactly what the benefits are going to be. I'm still fuzzy on this whole crypto thing in general and how it actually works or how they're even coming up with some of these valuations. It seems to be more speculation than anything. And so I don't know if it's something that is going to actually have some legs and come to fruition, or if it's, you know, he's just talking about, you know, some of the popular things that people see out there. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see. But crypto to me is still this mysterious, you know, we can't figure out how to value these things. And, you know, as investors, we're not speculators. We're investors, right? And so we have stayed away from crypto because we view it more as speculation.
Very interesting. There may come a time when you're going to be able to trade ETFs with crypto just the same as you would a stock.
Maybe, and it may be a new form of worldwide currency. That very well could be what it turns into. But, you know, currencies right now are valued, you know, based on, we talked about the exchange rate between the Canadian dollar and the U.S. dollar. You know, that is predicated mainly on the strength of the economy, right? Again, if you have a world whatever coin or Bitcoin or whatever they want to call it, you know, what is that going to be based on? Is that based off the supply and demand like it is now? Is that based off a collection of economies? Is that based off the world economy as a whole? I don't know. A lot of uncertainty out there. We'll have to see how it plays out. But certainly that's an area that is still, you know, confusing and mysterious. And I've asked these questions of some of the most foremost financial experts in the industry, and they can't answer them either. So, you know, we have certified financial analysts on staff, and, you know, and they've dabbled a little bit, but for the most part, again, it's mainly speculation at this point. So we'll see. We'll see what it morphs into. It may very well become a base currency that countries can trade in and out of, but they're still going to be trading in and out of it with their own currency, at least to begin with. So,
of course, I'm very biased, and in my view, and I certainly am not a financial expert by any means, but you need to, in my opinion, look for a coin that has utility. And we've been talking a lot about international stuff today, looking for a coin that expedites cross-border payments at a very fractional cost, and one that is compliant with New York State regulations, and one to which a whole bunch of banks and financial institutions have signed on. And yes, I am biased. I'm have personal and selfish reasons for saying what I just said.
Yeah, again, there's a lot of that needs to be worked out, and you know, banks will play a part, governments will play a part. You know, it is kind of the Wild West, you know, still. And so a lot of that's going to have to be figured out before I think, you know, big investors have a comfort level in really using this. But it could. It could be a great base currency for international trade, and, you know, it could have a huge benefit. I just don't know what that benefit looks like at this point. So, but I'm excited to see what, you know, where we go with not only Bitcoin, but, you know, some of these changes that President Trump is proposing when it comes to the tax code. as well as international trade. So it should be an interesting 4 years, to say the least.
Well, no capital gains on American-based crypto sounds pretty enticing to a lot of people. Glenn, thank
sure
you
does.
So much for all of your time today and for answering the questions people had. Very much appreciate it. And when do we hear you on the radio in your own show?
We'll be back on Saturday, 1 to 3, right where we've been for 25 years, right here on News Radio 930 WBEN. So we'll be
spoken,
live on Saturday. Look forward to
spoken
talking
like a
again.
True professional. Glenn, I don't even want to guess how many phone calls you've missed because you were nice enough to appear on WBEN, but thank you so much.
No worries. Thanks, Tom. Great fun. Appreciate it.
Glenn Wiggle of the Financial Guys on the Trocare College WBEN live line on News Radio 930 WBEN.